when you are neither untouchable nor invisible to the referee. It's That's MLS, a North American soccer podcast with myself, Andrew Bates, and Nick Thornton.
See, I knew that something about that was coming, and it's still coming. Andrew, can we slap players in the face when they touch our new shoes?
We specifically said at the end of last episode, no more face touching.
Don't touch the face.
This was a concern last week, and we tried to warn Zlatan. If only Zlatan had listened, he would have known, don't touch players in the face without asking.
We've done our part.
Zlatan Ibrahimovic got his, as you noted, his fancy new shoes tread on by Michael Petrasso, and boxed him in the ear. And then both players, not certain what to do next, just curled to the ground simultaneously in an attempt to create confusion.
Which was the worst part of that whole thing, but...
I don't think it's, like, the same as, like, a usual egregious dive that people talk about, because it's, like, because it's so obviously not even, and like, it's so ridiculous that, like, nobody will actually take it seriously. Either as simulation or as...
All right. I kind of disagree with this. I think it is an obvious automatic red card. And the slight brush, the slight stomp on the new shoes, I don't understand. I feel like maybe, okay, yeah, the yellow for simulation because you stepped on somebody's shoes and then you fell down.
But you don't even
actually feel like the referee gets this right. I feel like this is like he steps on his shoe and they get swatted in the ear.
It took me a long time to note the shoe stepping was actually happening, because when you see the GIF, I don't know if it cuts off the legs in the big GIF that went viral, but all you're looking at is Zlatan appearing to look around to make sure that nobody is watching except VAR and the millions of fans at home before giving this guy a thwack in the ear.
No, it's an obvious red card. MLS yes. Loves making a meal of these types of things and going like, well, is it? Isn't it? Of course it fucking is. Of course it is. It's an automatic red card. At the very least, like the big talk I think will be, is there further action to come against him? Because it's an obvious, it's out of the run of play. It's an obvious red card for the rules of the league. And like there's just nothing defensible about this move. He literally slaps him in the side of the head. And of course it's sort of a chiding, like, what the fuck, you're stepping on my shoe. But, like, it's against the rules of play. He should be sitting out for at least the next two matches, and he will be fined. I think it's fair. I honestly think it's fair. I think this is the induction of Ibrahimovic. But the other thing, too, that most people pointed out is that, forget MLS, look at Ibrahimovic's career, and he's been sent off so many times for this kind of petulant play. Fuck him, he's out.
I saw a video on the MLSsoccer.com front page titled "Analysis: What Was Zlatan Thinking?" Like there was like some sort of like match tactics that fit into slapping. But they introduce it by being like, Zlatan's first red card in MLS. Like, baby's first red card. Like, it's...
The thug. He's always been a thug. He's an amazing thug that can score amazing goals, but he is a thug.
Even comparing it to the Giovinco, which I didn't get a chance to see at the time that we talked last week, but I've looked as now just kind of like... Giovinco is trying to get somebody out of his face by sort of palming their chin and pushing them away, right? I think, in the Javinko face touching incident. Or he's get I that was my understanding just from the milliseconds that I saw of it. That one is way different than striking somebody when they're not looking.
It is, and that's why I think, at the very least, Ibrahimovic should be out for a couple of matches and fined. If we're working on consistency.
It makes for an interesting Beckham experiment style moment because they had been, you know, winless in four. Really could have. It is to Montreal's eternal detriment that they that LA did win that game somehow.
Yeah, which... that did not go well. And we tried to break down the power rankings last week, like it would make some difference to what we watched this week.
Hmm.
But I guess my question is, overall, just looking at the whole week, what were the teams that stood out to you? Like, we're obviously going to go through match to match and look at the whole thing, but what were the teams that stood out to you this week as doing something different from what we've talked about in the previous weeks? Because I feel like there's a few teams emerging from the pack, but there's also a few teams that we've talked about that have either rose to the occasion or not. I'm interested to hear what your take is on those.
When I look at this sort of question, I think first about teams that very much changed their that changed their fortunes with specifically or had a result that is very different or could perhaps change their path. So I'm not so interested in, for example, New York City beating the Rapids 4-0 because that's the Rapids and that's New York City. It proves only what we've seen so far. But I was very interested in DC United beating San Jose 3-1, which I think matches your sort of concern for San Jose in terms of if they're fulfilling their the potential. The in a similar vein, Philadelphia Union beating RSL 4-1, which is a crazy deal. And then New York Red Bulls, as I'm beating the Red Bull drum every week.
It's hard not to at this point. What drum are we beating, really?
Yeah, I did see that the new power rankings this week do have Red Bulls on first, which was my point all along. But those are my three teams. What are yours? I took three, so I might have stolen all of yours, so I apologize for that. Yeah.
No, that's okay. I just, like, there was a lot of games, and I just kind of wondered where people ended up in your estimation, which is funny because last week we talked about the power rankings, and only a couple of those teams actually made your picks, and I totally agree. I actually have nothing to add to what you picked. I think that's exactly right. The Red Bulls right now, to me, are the best team in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And the other teams you picked are... I'd add maybe Portland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because of their positive play and the way that they've moved up, but they're not there yet. But they've done extremely well.
I was very interested in that Red Bulls 3-1 away win at Atlanta. I was interested... Oh, I didn't know about... apparently there was an injury I didn't know about. But I was interested in the way... Whenever I talk to people about soccer, what I like about it, I talk about the way that games' narratives can change and how, like, a game kind of forms a narrative in and of itself. And there were a couple instances this week of events completely changing things. And one of those was the Martinez goal that was disallowed. Atlanta had gone up Martinez had scored, but I think that I'm trying to remember. I don't have written down exactly why it was disallowed, but I think that on review, it makes sense that it was. Like, I think it was like something like a... What did I have?
Research, don't we? And I'm not calling you out here. I'm calling myself out.
So Martinez, like, so
I don't even remember this game.
So what I have here, and now I remember. I don't remember what the deal was. Right? Is that Martinez? Okay, so there's a dispossession of the ball by New York's long, and the ball after a while cuts to Martinez, who has a slick looking cutback. And is able to put the ball in. The unfortunate part is during that slick-looking cutback, he fouled the defender. And I thought that this, as well as the... So that happens. Right, yes, okay. He literally clips the defender's heel, and that's how he breaks free. Enough to have all this. So it was a lovely goal, but it... It was a lovely goal, but it was absolutely the right call to make. I thought immediately after that, Atlanta, or I don't know if immediately, but soon after that, Atlanta concedes a penalty, which was a weird situation to me because it's just the same kind of like player holding that occurs on every single set piece in MLS and is illegal every time.
Yeah, that was a very fucking weird penalty. And
like, I've been trying to watch
every single penalty this season, but that was a weird one.
It was wrong. It wasn't wrong, but like...
No.
If you call every... But definitely, if that's the measure for a penalty.
And I feel like that's... there was a lot of action on Twitter from players this week. Just asking for consistency. It wasn't about that's the wrong call. It's just like, okay, well, what is a penalty? What isn't a penalty? So you're grabbing the shirt in the box. Like, there has to be some more conversation amongst the referees.
That makes sense. And that comes down to pro.
Unpopular take. Well. I feel like MLS has actually been one of the leagues that's been more consistent in terms of what they've decided they're okay with and what they're not. At least in terms of a few big things. Okay, all right. I see you throwing your head back.
I have thoughts.
for instance, things like hands to the face. There's just consistency in calls of like, that's an automatic red card. It doesn't matter who you are. Doesn't matter what you're doing. Doesn't matter if it's a joke. Doesn't matter. Like, the hand is in the face. It's going to be an automatic red card.
I think as much as Vancouver Whitecaps fans, including myself, complained about the seeming arbitrariness of DISCO, Disciplinary Committee, evaluations 2 years ago, I honestly think that the combination of that and VAR has played a big role in... Sure. Sometimes it's like pulling teeth.
It is. Well, so let's talk about an actual instance then, which is that in the 71st
of pulling teeth,
Garza gets sent off for what I thought was a great defensive clearance out of the box, but apparently his boot's too high and somebody is too close to him, and he gets a red card for it.
Garza has
made some shitty challenges early on in the season, but I felt like that was a very, very harsh red card.
I don't think that there is or as much. I don't think that there is or should be a high sticking penalty in soccer. You know, like the type of penalty for a play that could have been dangerous but was not. You know, like
I agree. Well, I agree and disagree. There should be a penalty for like if your foot is in front of somebody's face. And, I mean, honestly, I don't know how you call that rule, really. But, like, Greg Garza is unchallenged, alone in the box, clears it out of the box, I think with a deft bit of athleticism, and he gets a red card for it. I feel like that's not okay. He's nowhere near another player. And he's just trying to clear it. He's doing a defender's job. And it really does give the impression that, I mean, like, okay, we all kind of want to hate Atlanta at this point, but, like, you have to let defenders do their job. And if they can't leap up for the ball, and if they can't boot it out of the box, what can they do, really?
Yeah, that's unfortunate, especially because I wonder... No, it's there's definitely not enough at this point to talk about any sort of trend as opposed to our referees are. Would you start looking out to see if referees are coming down harder on Atlanta because of the reputation, like to try and overcorrect for a reputation of giving home bias calls in Mercedes-Benz?
No, I don't think they are. I think that referees across MLS don't understand what a center back's job is and what a fullback's job is. And they haven't been given proper direction as to what a safe clearance is.
Yeah.
Is that they're just told things like, well, yeah, okay, the studs are up and whatever. But like, there's nobody near him. He's not endangering anybody. Greg Garza has made some fucking dangerous plays this season. That's not one of them.
Mm.
I'd be the first. I would be the first to just throw him under the bus.
Yeah.
To me, this was a good defensive play, and that's the thing the players are, and clubs are asking for. It's just like, well, what can we do?
I did love that because of that issue and. I didn't see this on the highlights, but unfortunately Lawrence was injured at some point, which contributed to a whopping 12 minutes of added time.
Yeah, there was an awful lot of added time this week.
There was another game when that happened. Kamara Lawrence, hopefully he's doing okay. The other thing I wanted to note because I saw it in the highlight package was the commentator. I had mentioned last summer that I read 12 Yards, The Art of the Perfect Penalty Kick, with some of its lessons about how to take it. And a commentator on Royer's penalty was kind of a little worried about his chip down the middle and said, oh, he's lucky that the goalkeeper didn't just stand there. Wrong. That was smart. Goalkeepers disproportionately dive compared to going down the middle. If you don't telegraph too early, going down the middle is the easiest way to beat the stats.
You did it. You're right.
I'm right. Whoever that was wrong.
Okay, so, like, there was a crap ton of games this week.
I believe that's the technical term.
Yeah. According to the league. Who do we want to talk about? Because we just did 20 minutes just shit-talking referees in the league in general. But who do we want to talk about here? Because there's a couple of teams that stand out to me here. And, I mean, we could do another 20 minutes on Vancouver, but...
I do actually kind of... This is interesting to me, though. Because it's kind of like... Okay. It is after this... After we recorded on Wednesday before Whitecaps game... And let's start with that. We recorded on Wednesday after a Whitecaps game, or before the Whitecaps game.
Immediately aggressive about it. All right, fine, let's do it.
Fine, let's do it. Against San Jose, which was a very... I believe that was the opposite. I was like, oh, well, can we talk about this? Is this going to, is everything we said in the podcast going to be undone by whatever happens tonight, in tonight's game? Absolutely not. It was a 2-2 draw again. San Jose went up early again, and Vancouver was able to find a way to equalize again. So then we go on to the weekend. Everything looks like it's heading to a 2-2. A 2-0 loss to Dallas. And then sometimes all you need is 9 minutes of normal time and 7 minutes of injury time and all of a sudden it turns around to the third straight 2-2 draw. You have been asking for consistency, Nick, and it's been found. But the problem is, it's every match is a 2-2 draw now.
Yeah. The San Jose game, and, like, honestly, since we've been doing this podcast, we've watched a shit ton of soccer.
Yes.
And a lot of MLS teams we would never have ever given a shout to, ever. So I know that San Jose is actually a good team. The results don't show it. They're at the bottom of the table. All the problems are going on. But we've talked about them numerous times. San Jose is a good team.
Yes.
I feel like we can agree on this.
Yes.
However, this is a team that has had one of the worst records away from home. And Vancouver just, again, seemed to have no real game plan. And that is the worrying part. You know, they also went to Dallas, got a 2-2 draw, which is a fine result against one of the best clubs this season. Like, Dallas is virtually unbeatable this season. I'm okay with the point. I'm totally okay with that point. The thing I'm not okay with is how many goals we concede at home and
concede
away. And how many games we seem to enter with no real game plan. In fact, like, as of last year, we seem to have more of a game plan for away games than we do for home games.
Which is funny because it was the absolute antithesis of the strength previously.
Exactly. San Jose has struggled tremendously. They have a very, very, very weak back line that's been tested by so many teams. And to just be at home and to give up so much to them is really unacceptable. I also don't think that we're at the point where we need to fire the coach, because there's no coach to take over the place. But my God, this was just a complete disaster. And yet I feel like we turned it around by going to Dallas and getting a point out of it. And yeah, it's 2-2 and you give up two goals, but Dallas has been the best team. They're virtually unbeaten this season. And that's where I feel like we're at peak Whitecaps, is that we're just going to settle for mediocrity and that we can crash out against teams we should beat and we'll show up and occasionally get a point, maybe 3 points, against much better teams. But when it comes down to the playoffs, we're not there. We're not matched.
No. That's, of course, that's really a concern. When you look at that first goal, Teixeira, it was very good. Teixeira scores, then gives a calm down motion to tell people, don't worry, I'm not taking my top off this time. Kai Kamara Watson grabs the hem of his jersey and pulls it down just to ensure that that's not going to happen. Somebody who is in the stadium asked me, for the benefit of those around them, what the rules are around taking off your shorts to celebrate a goal. I found out, according to the laws of the game, you are not allowed to... The rule is just about jerseys. The rule only specifies as jerseys. You are not allowed to make any inciting or offensive gesture in the celebration of a goal. So if you... But the rule only specifies if you don't have the mandatory kit that you be sent to the sidelines to put the kit back on and then re-enter the game at the referee's discretion. So if you could somehow take the shorts off inoffensively, you're good. You're fine.
Do it offensively.
inoffensive shirt removal is not a card, according to according to the laws of the game. And my I am not a game. I'm not a football lawyer. Don't go to disco saying Bates told me I could take off my shorts, but or actual court. But that was so. That was a like you know that was like fine spirits. But you're right. If you look at the, if you look at the minute by minute possession graphics, that goal happens in the 19th in the sort of 5 minute intervals. That goal happens in the 19th minute. So a period kind of where, in those opening 20 minutes, it goes back and forth possession wise between San Jose and Vancouver. And Vancouver has a lot of the possession in that 5 minute interval and then scores in completely gives up the game for the next 20 minutes. The next 30 minutes is all San Jose after they score, as opposed to, gaining the momentum, which you might expect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because they have a shitty lineup in midfield. I'm sorry, like, it just does not add up. And...
No.
You know, the...
Rex Shea has awful hair now.
White dreads are still racist, and, like... Vancouver, like, I get Rabo's system. I really, really do. And I think he has tried to build a really good thing at Vancouver. And you know what? I'll put myself on the line to say I think his work isn't done at Vancouver. I think he's trying to build something, and I believe in that system. But he decides on a lineup that just... seems to not quite make sense a lot of matches, especially over the last couple of seasons, where, you know, you look at stats like the last game that Vancouver played, and you look at Tybert has a 93% accuracy with passing from the midfield. Why is anybody starting over him? On a team that controls so little possession and has so few positive plays going forward, and all Rabo can talk about is the play is going into the box, but what you need is a midfielder that can string passes together. And I just go, like, it's Felipe and Tybert. Just put them in the fucking midfield. Those are your midfield players. And he seems absolute to just, like, unless he's forced to, include them in the same lineup. I just don't get it.
When you look at the money Juarez is getting paid, you wonder if there is sort of a imperative to include him in the lineup. Although Felipe may be the better player, although I'm not 100% committed one way or the other on the two of them. I do agree with you that Robinson's job is not done. I feel like we've seen, if you're gonna do the Marvel movie metaphor, we're like at the end of Rabo Phase 2 or the beginning of Rabo Phase 3. Like the first phase was that horrific, the horrific time where there was very few away wins at all. And then you sort of went through the period where you had Teixeira, Mezquita, and Bolaños. Pedro Morales, I almost forgot his name after all this time, but I just remembered the WWE champ. The WWE champion. He's probably not dead. He's just gone. But my point is, we are in a transition moment between whatever the last stage was and whatever the next stage will be, whatever it's built around. But that piece isn't really here. Like, I don't think it's Kamara. It's not Marinovic. It's... Davies isn't there yet to be that sort of central piece.
I sort of disagree. I think it's here. I think it's Tybert. And I'm not trying to load too much on the boy. Uh-huh. But, like, Rabo's already pointed it out, is that this is the guy that strings things together. Every single match he's played, he's had a 90% or above passing percentage from midfield, regardless of what position he's played in. And he's played in a couple of positions in midfield. Like, at some point, you need to build your squad. And I get it. I get having a surplus of great players. I think Felipe is a fantastic addition to the squad. I think Gazal has shown great promise. To me, I keep going. I don't know where Juarez fits in. He showed moments of brilliance. Obviously, his pedigree is what it is. He's a great footballer. There's no doubt about that. I don't think he fits into our squad. And I would much rather see the playmaking abilities and the tackling abilities of Felipe and Tybert together as opposed to Juarez and Felipe. Felipe is not a defensive midfielder. He can dive in and cover if you need in a pinch. But Tybert knows that position so well. He can be a central attacking mid. He can be a defensive attacking mid. I'm confused at how Tybert is not the choice above Juarez.
Did you see the difference there when Tybert started against Dallas?
Yes. Immediately.
Mm-hmm. Because they also had Juarez on the bench. They had he was sitting, and then Tybert was sitting beside. Was he sitting beside Felipe, or was Felipe also on the bench? He was. Yeah, it was Tybert. It was the midfield was Breck on the left, Tybert, Felipe, and Ibini on the right. Which a lot of people are also taking taking their frustrations out on Ibini, which I'm not entirely sure of, but I do feel like that kind of lineup. I do feel like that kind of lineup is a risk averse one when playing away against Dallas. Yes. That's a great point.
I've talked to Jay DeMeritt about this. And Jay DeMeritt's major criticism of Russell Tybert was, we don't need a fucking ball chaser because we have Matias Laba to do that. But when you don't have Matias Laba to do that, you need a Russell Tybert to chase the ball down. The difference is that Russell Tybert can actually chase the ball down, win the ball, and then pass it to somebody with some significance. Russell Tybert has one of the best passing accuracies in MLS. Not just the Whitecaps, but in MLS, period. Mm. He needs to be playing consistently.
I think that's a great thing to look at. Because when you consider the way that Laba left, I feel like Laba kind of almost faded out somewhat. Does that make sense? Like, I think that he, because of the way, I think it was like an injury reserve sort of thing that he faded off the roster. There was not enough thought given to how are we going to replace him. Because at the time he wasn't as key in a role. But I think he absolutely is key in replacing them, finding somebody that can bring what he brought has not been on the agenda, and maybe it should have been.
No, we found a bunch of great attacking defensive players, but we haven't found an immediate replacement to the great, just defensive players.
Were you happy by the idea of coming up with a win there in Dallas, or because of to a certain degree you're seeing Blondell pan out a little bit with his the play he the own goal that he created. When in doubt, just, you know, get it in the box. Maybe some poor defender will boof it in there without thinking.
Considering all the things that have been going wrong for Vancouver and all the things that have been going right for Dallas, I was very, very nervous going to this match, and I thought that Dallas would just blow us away. Mm-hmm. A point is a great point on the road against Dallas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Showed great nerve and great grit. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate that it still happens that Vancouver seems to struggle against the most insignificant opponents and yet play the best in the league and really go toe-to-toe. However, at this point in the season, when things are not going your way, absolutely take the point. And anybody who says elsewise, like, I'm sorry, like, this is a crucial road point against one of the best teams in the league, not the Western Conference, in the league, that does not give up many goals. A great last-ditch effort. Absolutely. I'll take the point happily. Of course, the other sideline story that you could take is, like, Vancouver probably should have won this match. However, that's not where we're at. I will take the point against Dallas on the road. Happily. Happily. Dallas has been incredible this season. And they played a great game. And I feel like we were very lucky to get a point out of them.
I will bolster your appraisal of Tybert's passing in this game with the statistic that his passing accuracy was 93.22% with 55 on 59 passes.
Yeah. Pretty good. Pretty good. Again, best in MLS.
One team that is continuing its sort of climb back up and was able to recover from a little bit of adversity was Toronto, which seemed to be in a great position until equalizing, but then had Ryan Telfer, of all people, score the go-ahead goal to win 2-1 against Orlando. Did you kind of hope to see maybe a little bit more out of Orlando, or is this just kind of the slow return to form of Toronto against more and more challenging opposition?
Good question. I feel like it was inevitable that Toronto would finally just rise to the occasion, and Orlando, considering how much they've changed, would probably give up points. I did watch this game, and I thought that Orlando played okay, but let off the gas a little bit, and Toronto capitalized on that. It's very hard to tell, though, what that means, because last year we would have said, like, clearly Toronto's just going to climb up the standings, and it'll all be fine. It'll all be right as rain.
Mm-hmm.
But Orlando's been very, very good. I just think that at certain times they've lacked intensity. However, they've had lots of intensity in the past, and they've lost a lot of games. So I kind of actually just see this one as like a shrug. Okay,
right.
Toronto wins it. Orlando still scored a goal. I thought they both teams played okay, but I'm not sure really what we can draw from it.
I really liked the attacking rhythm of Jay Chapman to St. Ricketts in the corner post, the goal post. The three of them had a great passing display as Ricketts knocks one off the sidebar, and it pops out to Jay Chapman, who buries it home. The other thing that I like sort of more globally, I was talking about sort of the impact of events in a game on their narrative. And I think another thing that you saw another disallowed goal here, in Ricketts's offside goal that is disallowed. And then moments later, Orlando scores to tie up the game. I kind of chalk this up to one of the things that I think is wonderful about soccer is I noted in the the Whitecaps KC column that I wrote a while ago is that, like, the weirdest thing about soccer is that more goals aren't scored. So I think that whenever a goal is scored, disallowed or not, it creates this strange, time-distorted field where it's way easier to score a goal on either side just because the momentum is different. Like, there's just, like, a five-minute window in which, you know, up is down and left is right. Sometimes, depending on how the teams are positioned.
I've been in that vortex before where, like, everything is against you and it just shouldn't work and all of a sudden it starts clicking. Mm. And in fairness, when it's happened to me, we still lose the game. But, you know, it's 5-0 and all of a sudden it's 5-4 and you still lose the game and it's a blowout, but all of a sudden you score 4 goals and you're back in it. Like, it happens. There's just this weird chemistry buildup or whatever you want to call it that happens, and all of a sudden you're back in it. And I think we've seen a number of teams this season that have capitalized on that. And it's not to be discounted. I think it is significant.
I think that in winning, they clear the last of the danger following the Sebastian Giovinco face-touching incident of last week. Although there's word, and I think that this would be crazy, that TFC might be considering switching him to Tigres for Valencia.
Yeah, I believe it when I see it.
You're not biting.
You're not biting.
No.
It would seem so weird just because he's such a key part. I mean, if you think he's going to leave, he's going to leave. But it would be so weird to see Inter Valencia, to see the success they've had with Giovinco and then say, we need Inter Valencia.
Here's the bizarre thing, though. Like, I honestly don't think Toronto needs him at this point.
That's fair.
He's incredibly helpful. You want to have a player like Giovinco on your side. Absolutely. But they probably don't need him with the midfield connections that they have, especially with a player like Chapman coming up through the ranks. And I know that Chapman's 23, and I know that he's not a young player as we'd necessarily depict in MLS, but, like, they're going to be okay. Like, Toronto has set, despite so much bullshit they put up with, they've set themselves up very, very, very well for a good 4 to 5 years.
I don't have much to say about New York City 4-0, as mentioned. You gotta wonder what Tim Howard's long game is, man. It's
the paycheck. I don't know at this point. It was David Villa day. He probably should have been carded at least once and wasn't, which the commentators went after to no avail. And I think they were probably right, but that was one where you kind of went New York City FC against Colorado. Colorado has had a much better season than they did last season, but could not quite do it. And it just sort of broke. However, this to me is the match that you go, you don't want to read too much into it.
Yeah.
Really. It's a blowout, yes. I thought Colorado played well. This is another of the few matches that I saw, and I thought Colorado stuck it to them as much as they could. They got caught in the overlap. But really, I thought they set themselves up as best as they could against this side, and really, like, I don't know what you can do. I know that the East has become the new West in terms of the tightness of the points, but New York City FC really does have a different quality of player, and
As we said about them before, it really matters. It really depends on the matchup. If a team can stop them, they could go. They could be out as early as the first round. If they find the right mix of teams and the right results happen in other parts of the bracket, they can make it to MLS Cup. Portland 2-1 LA. You were saying that you were happy with Portland showing against LAFC. A couple of missed chances early for both teams. Big ups to Dejan Jakovic for his clearance, his stellar defensive work. We saw after Portland's first goal, which I thought was a great act of following up on a set piece that will consistently catch MLS defenses unaware. Because they're like, what? There's more that happens after that first kick. You have two of the best goals of the week with Vela's crazy snapping of a ball from his right foot into the top left corner.
Yep.
But then Armenteros for Portland scores the winner, which is not a name I ever heard. Associated with Portland, with a blasting shot. So, interesting result there as Portland also continues to try and stake its place after a shortly slow start.
Another team that had a terrible, terrible, terrible start to the season, and a team that I would love to hate, and I believe already once in our podcast this year I've had to just put that on the back burner. Portland is still missing something. They're still missing a key ingredient to just unlock a little bit of the magic that they have on their team. But the key thing here is that they didn't sell off the magic that they had last year.
Yes.
And it's not just through Valeri. Mm-hmm. And it's not just through Blanco. That they really do have a solid team chemistry that they rely upon. This is a massive, massive win. I know LAFC has given up points before, but and I know this was at home. But, Vela... Okay, I'm an Arsenal fan, and I still am pissed that we let him go. And we let him into La Liga away from Arsenal. And you see the type of thing that he could do.
Yes.
And I think he's actually still a much better player than what we let go at that point. He is in the prime of his career.
Yeah. And I think that, we talk about partially this issue of buying up players that are... Like the Zlatans and the potential Wayne Rooney signings. This is why I like to point out the contributions of a Carlos Vela or a Maxi Urruti, because they are superstars in this league and they should be, I think, a little bit more well known than they are based on their prodigious talents.
Carlos Vela is as an Arsenal fan, this is the bit that really shoves me to no end, is that Carlos Vela is and always has been a fantastic player and one of the best. Against the Ibrahimoviches and the Roonies and that ilk, maybe not. But he went into La Liga and he scored a shit ton of goals and created a ton of chances and just tore defenses apart. And he never really had the chance in the Premier League. And without going into a full episode on the shortcomings of the Premier League, good players lose chances. Fantastic players lose chances in the Premier League. And it, ultimately, sometimes it's a roll of the dice. But you'd sort of expect nothing less of him coming to MLS. And... even in losing games, you still go the consistency that he has, the vision that he has, and that left foot That left foot is fucking better than Beckham's. I don't care what anybody says. It's better than Beckham's. This is the best left foot in the league for scoring goals. And Carlos Vela is a non-entity a year ago. Nobody knows who he is.
Yeah, it's true. And I think that hopefully being in that high-profile position will help. I think that we will look back on this at the end of the regular season. At some point in the playoffs, we're going to look back at this game to scrutinize the lessons it holds for a playoff tie. There was a real goalkeepers battle in New England versus Columbus, which ended in a 1-0 win for Columbus. 16-13 were the shots. Amazing goal line clearance by Andrew Farrell of New England is for naught. It was unfortunate for New England, but you know that was just the kind of game that it was, and you didn't see the offense fire up to the same degree that they usually do.
No, but you'd sort of expect two defensive teams like these line up well against each other, and the nice thing was is that you didn't see a total defensive breakdown of either team.
No.
I don't want to see a 4-3 game against either of these teams.
Which was completely the opposite for me. When it comes to the lead-in. speaking of defensive breakouts, so the Philadelphia Union scored 4 goals this week, huh? who would have predicted that? B, great work to them. There was great play to set up the first. Just these are very simple passes to set up that first goal worked. And you kind of felt, at least in the first half, that like somebody gave the Union the codes to the deflector shields that completely allowed them to unlock the defense of RSL during the first half. It seemed that somehow they had it completely solved early on, which really sort of allowed put them on the path to success.
Yeah, well, we all know that Real Salt Lake has struggled significantly this season with injuries. But as we've talked about, Philadelphia is not a bad team.
Yeah.
They just finally strung things together, which is what makes me so concerned about the Whitecaps, is that this is the kind of game you need to put away, and Philadelphia came in with a game plan and played it to a T. They were perfect. And had it been a more significant matchup, I probably would go Philadelphia as my team of the week. They're not. But in this match, like, they really, really came with it, and they finally capitalized on all the things they're good at. They're not a great team. They're a mediocre team. But when they can actually string together the passes, and this is where RSL looks so, so weak, is especially down the wings. Like, we know what RSL can do attacking-wise. They've got Rusnak, they've got Plata, and we see what they can do. But if you can counter that on the wings and just play simple passes into the box.
You have a way in.
Yes.
Yeah, especially with all the injuries that they have. RSL really has no defensive lineup. And you can just throw balls in at will. And I thought it was incredibly deft of Philadelphia to just capitalize on it. And they needed to. They absolutely needed to. It was a crucial, crucial win.
There was a very, very, very pretty dummy. A dummy pass that was very successful.
Exactly. Last week we talked about how good Philadelphia can be without scoring.
And I think that one of the...
How much they live up to, and this week they came for it and they went for it. So, yeah, they're at the bottom of the league, but that's a big, big win. And Salt Lake lost it, but
one of the big worrying points for me is that I love Nick Raimondo, but he had a pretty big brick of a first touch.
Yeah.
Is he having some issues? Are we maybe seeing a decline that's more significant from him?
No, I don't think so. I agree with that assessment, but no, I don't think so. I think Nick Raimondo is still, he's got steel in his veins.
That's fair.
What he needs is the front four in front of him to actually block some shots and step up.
That's true. I mean, that's the thing. I was a little harsh on it, but I guess it's the sort of the as much as it is a sort of a brick thing, it's the sort of thing that can happen to anybody at any time. I'm just wondering if it is a part of a larger pattern.
The larger pattern is that RSL has no real defenders in their lineup right now.
Yeah.
They have much experience. And you know, if you think about how good RSL has been in certain stages of play, if you throw in two good defenders, they're top of the league.
Mm.
But they don't have that.
Also, DC beat San Jose 3-1. Another game that was a surprise to see. Great from Jungverth, who was 2-0 ahead in his run. Great from Maddox. Husin got so close, but then managed to get it again. Soft giveaways. Two big giveaways from DC or from San Jose, because they're also a great team. San Jose, but they had just two huge slip ups that even against a team that was bottom of the rankings last year, like DC. You still find them, you still can't give them that opportunity. Very happy to see David Husted back.
Yeah. I mean, in MLS, you can't count anybody out, really. But this one for me felt a little bit sweet.
Mm-hmm.
In that, I know San Jose has been troubled, and we've talked about how they're actually a good team. But DC came in and dominated this match. And I paid very close attention to this match because I like to watch teams that have struggled.
Yeah.
Don't seem to have much going on. And believe me, I've watched a lot of Darren Maddox over the years. And not a lot of it good, but him bringing down the ball and controlling it and sending it back into the box, and it didn't result in a goal, but he still ended up scoring a goal, and I think he provided on another one. Like, this is where you go as a coach, you need to understand your team and you need to add players that play well to the team. I thought this was okay. Granted, DC United has had a terrible season. However, I feel like they've played a lot of good matches against a lot of good teams where they've lost. Not unfairly, yes. They've just lost.
Yeah, it's not any... Right?
They won this match with an exclamation mark, and they just came in and did it. And they played to their strengths, and they... There was nothing special about it. But to me, I've tried to spend more time with teams like Philadelphia and DC United, Montreal, teams that have struggled. And I went, this is how DC United wins games. It wasn't by fluke. It wasn't by chance. This is exactly how they should win games.
It's worth noting that basically all the action happened in the first half and nothing really moved in the second. When I looked at Minnesota, Kansas City, I was initially very critical of Minnesota for the defender's decision to guard Kerry Shelton on a corner by standing behind him to try and prevent a header, which is maybe not a place that you could be helpful in. And indeed, for Kansas City did score. But moments later, I feel like, or not moments later, but later in the game, Kansas City also disappointed me by another case of ball watching where, you know, it Quintero gets the takes the first shot, the rebound comes in. Very good defensive players in this league are like Aiko Parra are standing there until they see that Quintero has the ball again, and then they start moving, as opposed to, you know, moving throughout the whole play. So I don't know if they were anticipating a clearance that they didn't get or what, but it was that was worse than I expect out of Kansas City.
To not really realize what was going on, that there was game that mattered with points. You know, they're still top of the West. But again, this is the thing that makes it so odd to break down the league, especially the West, game by game, is you go, SKC should have come out with more. They were playing Minnesota. You have the best versus the worst. And they both got a point. What can you really take away from it? And I watched this game. I don't know what to tell you. I really don't.
Well, I think that when we looked at the table last time, when we looked at the table at the end of last year, we saw that Sporting Kansas City concedes too many draws. They had the league's highest draws last year. They are not in that conversation this year. They've got three. Plenty of other teams got three. A couple have, or at least two have four. No, one has four, one has five. So they're in the middle of the pack in terms of the amount of draws they have. But this is one of the ones that you look to. That was their weakness last year in terms of not being able to come up with a concise finish. The last game on the schedule is maybe one of the games, one of the week's most whipsaw. Houston 3, Chicago 2. With Chicago playing at home, what did you think of that?
Despite Chicago not playing well, in recent memory.
Yes.
Like, okay, they've been okay. I thought this was a massive, massive win for Houston.
Yeah.
The thing that, for me, take nothing away from this win. It's a great win. It's a great game. And I suggest everybody go watch the highlights if you want to learn how defenders should not defend. I still feel like there's at least one or two more gears to go with Houston, and I feel like if they can just tighten things up a little bit, they actually could be the best in the West. They're just a little too sloppy at times, despite great, great, great speed down the wings, and great firepower, and great accuracy. They just need to tighten up as a team. And that, like, I don't think this about a lot of teams in MLS. Like, they've got great players, they've got great coaches, they've got great tactics. But for me, Houston should be doing far better than they are.
Mm-hmm.
They just need to tighten things up as a team.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that this, what I had in my list in terms of sort of what turned things, was I think that that penalty gave away Chicago's advantage. What I would refer to as a pretty safe position. They gave away that safe position, and then even though it was a draw at that point, a 2-2 draw, when the momentum's against you, the momentum is against you. So that sort of speaks to that, you know, the issue of Houston having holes in their game, because although they did the best, and Ellis did an amazing job, it wasn't as much of a scenario where they found holes in an opponent as opposed to they took advantage of the opportunities that were provided to them.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it for the results this week. Elsewhere in the world, the Canadian Premier League announcements are rolling out. York 9 already happened. The Calgary FC happened. Calgary. I don't know that people don't say that, but they probably will. That's probably going to be the people calling Toronto FC FC of Calgary FC. Is going to be people calling them the Calgary. I can't even say it. Halifax is coming up this week, so that'll be fun.
I just realized how red my face was for being out in the Ontario sun.
I've been looking at the other screen
the whole time. Now I'm just looking at it. It's like, oh, God.
You'll be coming back on the tan. Yeah, Nick is out there training to try and try out with York 9. So best of luck to you in that. I did run into somebody in the bar who I said that I liked soccer. And he seemed to believe that I had some sort of connection with the professional team, which was hilarious. ESPN had the Nigel, we're pulling for you for Halifax there, buddy, wherever you are, if you do make it out to Halifax, or if you made it home last night, or whatever night that was, Sunday. The ESPN put out its World Fame 100 of the 100 most famous players. The number one name on the list was, of course, Zlatan, but as people talk about the lack of popularity at 25 was Zlatan, the only MLS player on there. But I also wanted to give a shout out to the fact that Alex Morgan of the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team is on there, and no NHL or no Major League Baseball players are on there. So Alex Morgan is more famous than every active NHL player globally.
She fucking should be. However, if you saw the recent highlights from Marta's previous goal, I don't know what to say. That's a goal.
That's good. And I think that it speaks to how popular women's soccer can be if it's given the choice. If people, you know, sort of
if you give embrace them the choice, it and allow given them. The audience, like
yeah.
I still think during the World Cup break we should just exclusively talk about women's soccer.
That'd be fun. I like the idea of that. We talked a little bit about doing women's soccer in ASL and movie reviews. So if you have any soccer videos, if you have any soccer movies that you want reviewed during this time, there are plenty of podcasts where you can get World Cup news. So if you have a deep dive you'd like to see at that time, go find Nick. And Nick, where can they find you online to send their movie review requests or pick an NWSL team for you?
They can find me at That's So MLS on Twitter.
You can find me at Team Bates, www.team-bates.com. I'm an editor at Howler Magazine, whatahowler.com. You can also find this podcast at thatsomls.com. And please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes.
True, do that thing. Like, you know, show your support in some tangible, meaningful way.
It would be really
like
nice.
Like a squirrel in the net.
It would be really, really nice, and really, yes! Oh my God!
How
we almost forgot.
Just talking about
we
this
almost
now?
Forgot. We almost forgot about the squirrel in the goal. There was a squirrel in the goal in the Toronto game. Its player efficiency rating might have been higher than Will Johnson's. I don't know
and,
if there is one of those
still
for soccer,
higher
but
than
I do that.
Any Whitecaps player.
In the meantime, we advise that, like that squirrel, don't get sent off.
Don't step on a shoe and then slap a person in the face.